Hi, this is Paula Moreau, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
You were just a summer flame, like the autumn leaves you change, and the winter winds blew in, and now I'm over you. When the winter winds blew in, and now I'm over you.
How's everybody doing? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? Y'all like the Salty Dogs? From Little Rock, Arkansas, the Salty Dogs' feel-good country music has been hailed by critics and fans alike and has been featured on TLC's Trading Spaces as well as HBO's Rectify. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark can be heard on blues legend John Weston's CDs, Blues at Daybreak and Got to Deal with the Blues. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Each show we feature an artist, and tonight's featured artist is Little Rock photographer Grab Weldon. And our featured piece is this piece right over here, the one on top, which is an HDR enhanced photograph entitled Little Rock Express and is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this piece and Grab at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Robinson is a food and travel writer based in Little Rock, Arkansas. She writes the award-winning blog Tie-Dye Travels, is the author of Arkansas Pie, a delicious slice of the natural state, and the author of Classic Eateries of the Ozarks and Arkansas River Valley. Kat is a feature blogger with Lonely Planet, an explorer with Arkansas Wild, and a correspondent for Serious Eats. She's been a bi-weekly columnist with Sync Weekly, an adventurer for To Enjoy Magazine, a writer for Deep South Magazine, an eco-conscious journalist for Green Zine, a mommy blogger for Savvy Kids, and a contributor to Food Network Magazine. Kat's work has also appeared in Little Rock Family Magazine, Living in Arkansas, Emerald City of the South, and the print version of the Arkansas Times, as well as the Arkansas Free Press, Let's Go Magazine, and Today's Man. Her latest work has included Forbes Travel Guides, Startle.com, and USA Today. Her awards include a Henry Award for Media Support from the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism, a Best Freelance Writing for a Large Daily by the Arkansas Press Association, and numerous Arkansas Times runner-ups for Best Local Blog. Kat is also the communications manager for the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism and lives with her daughter, Hunter, in her hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas. Tonight, Kat's daughter may just follow in her footsteps in Catching Birds. Ladies and gentlemen, Kat Robinson.
My daughter Hunter, at the age of 4 and a half, is full of questions. They range from the normal, why is the sky blue? Why do cats scratch? To the inane, why can't you eat bees? She also asks a lot of permissions. Mama, may I play in the tent? Or Mama, could I go climb that tree? I think that's normal at her age. Then she hits me with a question I didn't see coming as she jumps in the car after school one day. "Mama, is it okay if I catch birds?" Now, on the surface, it may not seem like something you'd want your child to do. Many parents might just think it's not possible for their child to catch a bird. But I know better. See, I was a bird-catching child. And I know a thing or two about catching birds. Hunter, I want you to listen to me. I can't give you an answer right away. "But can I?" she asked. "Just hear me out," I tell her as we turn on the street. "Back when I was about your age, I asked the same question to several people around me. And the general answer was no. Some of my more skeptical aunts and uncles flat out told me I had no business even trying. And what would I do with one if I did? I figure they all thought I'd never be able to do it. But one day, I was out in my grandmother's yard. It was hot, maybe August, and it had just rained. I saw a couple of mockingbirds flying down and start going to town in the grass, probably pulling up the earthworms that had come up to surface with the wet. So I decided I was going to try. Now, I wasn't going into this with no research at all. There were a good number of cats in my life, all of them outdoors. And I had been watching them. I noticed how still a cat would get when a bird came by and how his eyes never left what he was after. And I noticed how the cat would be motionless one moment and then pounce, and the bird would never knew what hit it. Hunter is silent considering this. At the next stoplight, I look back to see if she's listening, and she's staring at me. "Mama, do you know how to pounce like a cat?" I laugh. "It's not about me pouncing like a cat. It was about me being still. I went out in that lawn. I just kind of slowly shuffled out towards the birds. When they look up, I'd freeze like a statue. And when they looked away, I very slowly moved. When I was within 10 feet or so, I slid down to my knees and crawled a little closer. And when I was close enough to see the pupils in their eyes, I grabbed, and I'll be darned, but I got one." Hunter, by this time, is enthralled, and she lets loose. "Did you keep it? What'd you do with it? Did it try to fly away? Was it pretty?" "Hang on, love." "And no, I didn't keep it," I told her. "I had grabbed it with both hands, and when I loosened my grip, I could see this little bird's head through my fingers. He was gray on top and orange on the belly, and he was just frozen. I thought I might have hurt him. And while I was trying to think of what I was going to do next, he pooped on me." A roar of laughter erupts from the girl child, and I laugh right along with her. She giggles and she repeats, "He pooped on you, he pooped on you," several times. Then I mention she's 4 and a half. "Well, Hunter, I let him go. It surprised me, and I had to go get the water hose and wash down my hands and shorts. But now I caught one. I was going to go try to catch another. And I did. Oh, how I did. I caught mockingbirds and sparrows and cardinals. And I'd look at them, and they'd look at me. And I'd let them fly off. I had friends my age, Hunter, who I got to see when my mom would take me over to their houses. And I catch a bird, or I tell them about catching a bird, and they tell me how I wasn't supposed to touch birds, and how they might have cooties, and how baby birds could never again fly with their mama birds. But I listen. Well, no. My friend Jason, he wanted to catch a bird, but he couldn't, so I caught one for him, and he kept it in a shoebox. But you know, birds are meant to fly, and this one kept in a shoebox died." Hunter gets quiet for a minute. "A soft voice. I'd never keep one in a shoebox." "Nor should you," I answer. "A few birds like parakeets and macaws and toucans, if they live here, they have to be in a cage because they can't make it in the world out there. Climate's not right. They're pets. But birds that fly in the sky every day, they're free. And it's okay to look, but not to keep them." "But Mama, can I catch a bird?" Hunter asked again. "Can you? Well, maybe you can, but that doesn't mean you should. When I was maybe 8 or 10, there was one day I caught a bird when my mom wasn't home. I wanted mom to see that bird and see how good I was at catching birds. And I thought I could put it in a box or a crate just for a few minutes until mom gets home. And it'll be all right. And I can let it go then. And so I took the bird inside. That was a bad choice. I just made inside. And when I went to shut the door, I accidentally loosened my hands just enough for that bird to escape. Yeah, I flew all over the house, through every open doorway, trying to get out. And the problem is with a bird in the house like that is it knows someone's trying to catch it. So it doesn't settle down, not unless it can hide up high somewhere. And after I tried getting that bird back in my hands a while, it roosted atop a curtain rod and it just stayed there. And then mom came home. "Did you get in trouble?" Hunter asked. Well, not right away. That bird was quiet, and I thought to myself, if it stays still tonight, I can get it down tomorrow. So I didn't say anything to my mom. But about time dinner came around, that bird wasn't scared anymore, and it came down, swooping down through the dining room just as dinner was done. My mom hollered and shouted. She went and she got a broom, went after it, opened up the doors, and she finally shooed it out. And then I got spanked. "You got in trouble," Hunter answered. "I did, but even that didn't catch me from catching birds." "Do you still catch birds, Mama?" Well, funny thing about that. When I got older, I got interested in other things. There was school, and in the summer, there were friends to hang out with and music to listen to and stories to write. I stopped catching birds for fun and just went on with my life. In the back seat. But Hunter, it came in useful. There was one day when I was working at Today's THV back in the early aughts when I did the morning show, and we had this weather garden, and there was a sliding door that separated it from the studio, and one day this bird just soared straight in through the door, in through the studio, and straight on into the newsroom. And the newsroom there had very, very high ceilings, so when someone would try to shoo it out, it could just fly up high and back again. Well, the show started, and I was the only one in the newsroom. And I noticed the bird swooping down again, and I watched it, and I saw it go under Tom's desk. I was back when his desk was right next to the studio doors. I went over there, pulled back the chair slowly, slid down to my knees, and pounced, and I got that bird. And I walked it right out the door and through the studio out to the weather garden, and I let it go. "Did it ever come back, Mama?" Hunter asked. We were nearly home by that point. Well, I don't know. It was just a little gray and white bird, and I couldn't tell any difference between it and any of the other birds. "I hope it came back," Hunter tells me. Thing is, Hunter, it's all right to catch birds. It's all right to try. Now, I wouldn't do it at school. There's not a lot of room to run on the playground. There's things to fall over. But I won't say no. Just remember, if it was free in the first hand, it was probably meant to be free. I pull in the driveway, park, and Hunter and I unbuckle our seatbelts. And I'm just stepping out of the car when Hunter is suddenly standing next to me, her big blue eyes sparkling. "Mama, could you catch a bird for me?" I touch the top of her head. "No, love, I can't," I tell her as I run my fingers through her soft hair. Sun's starting to set behind her, and the orange and yellows like brush strokes around her. "It's your turn to catch the birds."
So thank you so much, Kat Robinson, for being on the Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. In your story, which is really quite beautiful, your mother got very angry when the trapped bird swooped and she had to chase it out of the house. And you say that you got a spanking, but did you actually tell her the story about catching the bird?
Not until after I got that spanking, but she knew. I mean, it was my MO. That's really just the kind of thing I did.
Did she ask you how the bird got in the house?
She just knew that I was the one that brought the bird in the house.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, I explained to her that I went out and caught it. And, you know, maybe there was a little admiration there, but
you can't really show admiration when you're like, you know, you should not do this.
So with your daughter, you actually didn't tell her that she could not do this. That's an interesting turn.
I think of it this way. Whenever I was little, the fact that I actually had the prowess to get the bird, she wants to do this, and she actually wants to do this probably a little younger than I am now. Or, well, I am then. I am now would be kind of ridiculous. But she wants to try. And I don't want us to squelch that passion to try. My mom wasn't upset that I caught the bird. She was upset the bird was in the house and she had to get it out.
Right.
So she's, you know, just fine with that. With Hunter, though, she's an unusual child. At least, I guess every parent thinks that their child's a little unusual, but she seems very prescient. She seems very knowledgeable about the world around her. From the moment that she was pulled out and put on my chest and looked at me with these eyes, these big eyes, and just like she knew exactly what was going on and had made a deal with me. We're in this together, Mom.
So I am dying to know. Now, Hunter, this was just several months ago when this story took place, right? So she's still, she's five or
she
so?
She turns five next month.
She turns five next month. So I'm very curious, and the audience might be too, has she become a bird catcher like you?
Not to my knowledge, but I have seen her try. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen her try often. She usually does that apparently at school, but I'm hearing reports. Which I told her, you know, there's things to fall over there. Why not try in the backyard? But my daughter's very, very headstrong.
This is such an interesting conversation between a mother and a daughter that takes place. And Hunter's, like you said, she seems to be a very fascinating and interesting little girl. So are there other stories about Hunter that you can share with us?
Well, I tell people about the fact she started going on restaurant reviews with me. I was doing restaurant reviews whenever she was born. Her first one was at 3 weeks, but she doesn't have much of memory. She slept through it. But her first solid food was not, you know, bananas or something out of a jar. It was a ball of wasabi paste. Mm. We were doing a restaurant review at a teppanyaki restaurant and watching the chef, and she reaches over her sushi plate and just grabs that wasabi ball she puts in her mouth and then reached for the other one. Child loves spicy. She also likes to steal straws and has pretty much from the time she learned how to walk. She would go up, she would find a straw. She would hoard them. I would find straws all sorts of crazy places, pretty much from when she figured out what to do with them. And she'd go up and take sips out of people's drinks. It's a good thing I don't, you know, I'm not an alcohol drinker, but that's how she figured out she doesn't like grapefruit juice. She didn't want to look at me after that. Like, why would you drink that, Mom?
So we have a few minutes here at the end for audience questions.
Where is the best pie in Arkansas?
I won't answer where the best one, just my favorite. And that happens to be the bourbon chocolate chunk pecan pie at the Greenhouse Grill up in Fayetteville. There are 180 restaurants in the pie book, Arkansas Pie, Delicious Slice of the Natural State. It is a hard, hard thing to determine. And I don't have just one best pie because there are a lot of good pies and there are a lot of different kind of pies around the state. But I get asked that a lot, and that's pretty much my answer.
You talked about being able to catch birds.
Yes.
Did you catch or collect other animals?
Well, there was a period of time when I was closer to Hunter's age where, you know, toad catching was a big deal. My mom and I had lived in an apartment and finally moved to a rent house. I guess I was 5, maybe 6 years old. And each evening at twilight, my friend Jason and I would go out and try to catch as many toads as possible and see who would win. And then there was the catching of cats. Now, there were several neighborhood cats in the area, and I was very good at catching even the most ornery of the cats, and I am very lucky I don't have more war wounds to show for it. But collecting them, no. No, they always went back to where they needed to go.
Do you and your daughter have pets?
We do. We have a cat by the name of Ellie, otherwise known as Hissy McBody Pants. She is a 5-pound munchkin cat. Her legs are about 2, maybe 3 inches long. She is an owner surrender, and came to us last year, and she likes me a bit more than Hunter. She likes us both now, but the cat, whenever I come home from a trip, likes to crawl up in bed when I'm sleeping and lick my entire head.
How did you become a blogger for Lonely Planet, and what does that involve, and how much time does that take?
Doesn't take as much time anymore because my day job takes up a lot of time, but from time to time I get contacted, and that was a lot of times I said in that sentence there. Every once in a while, Lonely Planet still contacts me and asks for information on the state of Arkansas. But back in 2008 and 2009, they started a program called the Blog Sherpa program. And they were looking for writers across the world to write for Lonely Planet to be local experts. And I was one of three in the United States, and I covered the American South. And they did a lot of synergy with my Tie-Dye Travels blog and duplicated a lot of my blog entries on there.
I read your blog religiously. Jeff Rosenzweig and I are both criminal defense lawyers representing death row inmates. Your last meal would be?
Well, now, a lot of people in this audience probably know the strange bit of me being a restaurant reviewer for those years. I have an allergy to pork, which developed about the time I turned 19. So I'm thinking my last meal would include some Memphis barbecue and some nice battered and milk-fried pork chops and a nice Thanksgiving ham. If they're still able to execute me after that, so be it.
When I was coming up very young, my dad said, if you want to catch a bird, put salt on its tail.
I've never assaulted a bird. I could mention it to Hunter, but heaven knows what had happened to all the shakers in the house.
Any strange diners that you would recommend that are close?
Strange diners. There's a lot of strange diners, and a lot of good diners, too. Here in North Little Rock, Starlight Diner has reopened recently. If you want to talk strange diners, I guess, out of all the diners in the world, the one that I would talk about the most would probably be the Old South in Russellville, Arkansas. And that's the diner that I've probably spent the most time in during my college years. It's also where Elvis ate. It's mentioned in the new book. It's strange more in the fact that it serves a dish called a fried honey bun, still sold for $1.05. Same price it was when I was in high school and college and all through my TV career and even today. 25 years, $1.05. And it simply is a Hostess honey bun unwrapped, put on a plate, and stuck in the microwave with a pat of butter. So if you want to talk strange, I guess that's close to it.
Food journeys are so much fun, such as the Tamale Trail with Arkansas and Mississippi. I'm curious to why you chose the Ozarks and Arkansas River Valley for your book.
Well, it didn't start out to be Ozarks from Arkansas River Valley. Back in January of this year, I was contacted by History Press, who published the Arkansas Pie book. And I had turned in a couple of book proposals that weren't supposed to even be decided on until at least May. But they're very excited about the food scene in Arkansas. And they commissioned me to write one that was supposed to have been called Classic Arkansas Eateries, A Delectable Tradition of Dining Out. Well, I kept saying there's a lot of eateries in Arkansas. That's going to be a very big book. And I said, well, we have a limit how much you can put in there. So in August, I went back and I said, there's no way I can write just one book. It's really like 3, 4, or 5 books. I said, you want to do more than one book? Sure. Which one do you want to start with? So I decided to start with the Ozarks and Arkansas River Valley. I'm currently doing research on a Delta Classic Eateries book. Then I'll do one on Southwest Arkansas and wrap up with the greater Little Rock area. That is, if I keep on selling books, so please buy a couple.
Kimberly Torres here, the tourism director for the Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau. So they say that kids say the darndest things. You know where I'm going with this.
Oh, boy.
Your kid. What kind of darn things has she said?
Oh, this is going to be embarrassing. My daughter was a breastfed child, and there is a particular word that she enjoyed saying because she started talking before she stopped breastfeeding at 13 months. A certain word that she had a fascination with and loved to blurt out at the most inopportune times, you know, radio interviews and in the middle of supermarkets. And that word is nipples.
To date, she knows that she is going to be in serious trouble if she says the word nipples in public. I've probably ingrained some serious problems with this child in the future.
So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Kat Robinson, for being on the Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. More can be found out about Kat, her travels, and her books at tiedyetravels.com. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by William F. Lehman Public Library, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Dairy Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Jam, don't shake like that. It must be jam, cause jam, don't shake like that. Here she's looking mighty fine, she's dancing in a cowboy hat. And she ties her hair up high, and she shimmies down low. Yeah. And she ties her hair up high, and she shimmies down low.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.